Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The View From Here. I'm your co-host, Jeff Milchin.
Along with Steve Kirkhoff.
And we are joined today for a discussion about local food systems in the Gallatin Valley with Kate Wright of Open and Local and Aaron Jackson of the Gallatin Valley Farm to School program. So I'd like to start things off with just getting a sense of what's going on in the Gallatin Valley in southwest Montana when it comes to local food. And we hear a lot of talk about local food systems, and maybe you could help listeners get a better grasp of what are people talking about when you hear that term.
Just a point of clarification, I am one of the steering committee members for Open and Local, which is a coalition focused on strengthening the community food systems of the greater Gallatin region and connected communities. I think there is a misperception that a local food system can be a viable thing in isolation, but really we're connected to our region and many other layers of the food system.
And that is Kate Wright.
Anything to add to that, Aaron?
Sure. I am really, first of all, really excited that you all are choosing this as a topic of conversation for today, because I think it's an incredibly important one to talk about. We are all part of the food system, whether or not we like it when we eat. And so just being able to inform folks in our community about what's already going on and how they can get more involved, I think, is hugely beneficial in terms of creating a more resilient community and a more resilient community-based food system here. So there is a lot going on that I think, we can cover. I can't cover it all this moment.
Great. Well, this may be the first of many conversations on the topic, so this is kind of an introductory episode. And was wondering, Kate, if you could tell us a little bit about Open and Local, what led to its creation, what are the activities, and what are the goals that you all hope to accomplish with it?
Yeah. So we came together back in 2016 as a hodgepodge of community members. Basically, there were seven of us at a table drinking beer. And the question was,
Beer from where? I'm joking. I'm sorry.
I don't recall where those particular brews came from.
Avoid, like, I'm the last person to like have any cast any aspersions. I just got done with an Oreo, so.
So we were chatting about how important in this valley in particular, we're seeing so much of our ag land disappear. And we have so many people also who care about local food. It felt like a real disconnect. And so the origins for Open and Local really came from asking that question. There is a connection between people's love for healthy, local, fresh food and our ag land. And that led us down a path of inquiry to what can we do to work together to help people better understand where their food comes from, why it matters, and how they can engage in our local food economy.
So that's an interesting point you raise about open space and land preservation. So my impression is that in the Gallatin Valley, a lot more food is on a smaller scale and geared toward local markets as opposed to the giant wheat fields that you see up toward Helena or Great Falls and a lot of the larger scale crop production in many parts of the state. Would that be accurate?
I think that would be accurate, but actually when you think about the valley as a whole, there's the Amsterdam-Churchill area, which has definitely large acres. There's some incredible folks out there, whether it's potatoes or other crops that are being grown. And one of the things that we see in this valley, because land is so expensive, is finding ways to help the next generation come back to the land. And one of our hypotheses early on is, well, if you can bring a family back by having a high-value second crop that can be produced for the local food market, that could increase the viability of ag in our valley and help slow the loss of those agricultural lands. So Open and Local has really shifted from, while our concern is really with the loss, that was one of the seeds of this, is the loss of ag land and the threats. We are really focusing on the food systems in our area, thinking about, I can tell you what our vision is, which is really ever increasing percentage of Montana's food produced in region and a place where people of all income levels can purchase and choose to purchase and have access to fresh, local, healthful food.
Great, thank you. And Erin, would you like to give us kind of an introductory picture of the work of your program with the Gallatin Valley Farm to School?
Sure. Gallatin Valley Farm to School is a Bozeman-based nonprofit, and it was started about 10 years ago by a group of parents concerned about the quality of the school lunches. And since then, we have grown dramatically 10 years later. But our work really focuses on connecting children to healthy local food, because we too believe that all children and all people should have access to healthy food. And so equity within the food system, we know, is a huge problem. And that's something we are trying to right a little bit here in Bozeman with our work. And so we focus primarily within the schools through our programs in the classroom, the cafeteria, and then, of course, in the broader community. So, you know, one of our programs in the cafeteria specifically is really to get more local food into the cafeterias and more scratch cook food served for kids to enjoy. And this is a way to create new markets for our farmers and then also increase the quality of the school lunches. We also have a lot of classroom programs where we do garden-based education, so we're helping educate the next generation on how to actually grow their own food and harvest it. And then we take them all the way through from seed to table to the end of the food system, where they're learning how to cook with it, and then we're exposing them to tons of local foods so that they can then be brave, adventurous tasters and gain those healthy eating habits, learning how to cook and taste with whole foods.
Excellent.
And I, you know, it was really fun because the executive director of Gallatin Valley Farm to School was one of the people at the table when Open and Local was a question. You know, how can we collaborate together? Because I think better, probably more than any other nonprofit, Gallatin Valley Farm to School understands you need farmers producing food in the valley to have a vibrant farm to school program. And so thinking about the system as a whole, which I assume we'll get into later in the conversation, is a really important first step. And that's why, you know, I mentioned our vision earlier for what Open and Local would love to see, where we're really focusing right now. And we are still all volunteer and a growing network. But our focus is really increasing the viability of farming here and the local food system. And then the second piece is really just increasing people's understanding of the food system and how to engage in it. You know, how can they participate?
And we love starting from square one with the children to really create the conscientious consumers while they're still school-aged and developing their preferences for food and, yeah, engaging them in that whole food system so they are more aware of the impacts of their food choices and where it comes from.
You know, this is Steve Kirkhoff, and as I'm listening, I just keep wondering how complicated the most fundamental thing is, right? There's not a day that goes by that those of us who are fortunate enough to afford it eat, right? We do eat every day, three times a day usually, sometimes more. I'm a snacker.
Or six. Yeah.
But something as simple and as fundamental and necessary as food is such a complex system that it's like how it actually operates, how the stuff that we're putting on our plates gets to us, like, well, how many hands does it touch before it comes to us? How many miles does it travel? How many processes does it go through? What is the quality of the soil? What is the sort of profitability of that very product that we're consuming? All these things are mysterious, right? It's like, I just look at the steaming broccoli. I can't see the system that supports its existence on my plate. And that's why I find this topic to be like really fascinating and somewhat difficult to talk about. From my point of view, I've been shopping at the co-op for probably a quarter of a century. And would it be fair for me to think that you, in your own ways, are trying to help promote a sort of co-opization of food in our community? Because I go to the co-op on the belief, and I hope it's not mistaken, that the people who are purchasing the food that will then be sold in the co-op are using a value system that I also adhere to, and that I place my trust in the buyers, for one. And that means that I trust that the soil that the products are coming from is good and clean and healthy, and that the people who are producing it are making a living wage, and that maybe it's local because we'd like to support local people. people. I mean, these are the reasons that I go to the co-op. Also on the belief that the people who work for the co-op itself are making a living wage and have benefits. And so it's that gigantic ball of yarn that I'm talking about. But my question to you is, do you feel like that is sort of your mission? Is that the co-opization of food in the sense that you want to create a system that delivers food that's fair and equitable, profitable and clean and healthy and that kind of thing? Is that what you're going for?
The whole bowl of wax in one thing. I wouldn't characterize it as the co-opetization of the food system. I would say it is really helping build in more channels an equitable, sustainable food system. And I think that one aesthetic or one way of looking at it is counterproductive. Like there is, you know, Town and Country also does incredible work bringing in local produce and local products from around the state. So I think maybe it's just a matter of semantics.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, building a more sustainable program, because it's really challenging. Aaron and I were chatting earlier about how we have this incredible food system, right? That we're so proud of feeding the world. And yet there's been some consequences to that kind of agriculture. And our farmers in Montana are some of the first to know that they want to grow in ways that they're able to take care of the soil more. But it gets super complicated super fast. There's so many uncertainties mm-hmm. that farmers face. And it gets complicated quickly. Sorry, I didn't mean
No problem.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted, I guess, to appreciate the complexity of everything you just said, because our food system, I think, can be treated if you don't think about it as this black and white thing. Yeah. But the fact that it's called the food system, it is a multifaceted, interconnected system that has so many different variables. And so it's really easy, I think, to be engaged with it just based on its complexity. And so you brought up all of these points about that I think tie back into, you know, why I really am so passionate about this work is the story that all food has. So when you go somewhere and you purchase a product, that product didn't just appear on that store shelf. That had an entire story back, you know, before it was even planted in some form in the land. And then all of the decisions that were made along the way to get that product from its origin to the table. And so I think, you know, starting to ask some of those questions is super important. And the fact that you've been thinking about that, I think you're far ahead of a lot of people. And so I think our mission is really, how do we get more people to think like that in this way where they're not just taking something at face value, but they're really considering the, you know, the environmental practices that went into growing that food. So where their chemicals sprayed, or what were the soil health practices, the animal welfare, what were animals fed and how were they finished? The social practices, the social justice, what were the farm workers paid? Were fair labor standards enacted? And then, you know, how far, in terms of environmentally, how far did that food travel to get to us? And so when you buy something, you are voting with your dollar and you're voting with your fork every time you eat something. And so it's, how can we encourage people to think a little bit more and learn about the whole path that that food took? And then make sure they're putting their money into the food products that really align with their values and the values of our community. Because when we support our local farmers, we are supporting the land use practices they use.
Well, to follow up on the comment about the complexity of the food system, I'm really happy to be a part of this show and to sit around with people who are really trying to educate our community about the importance of what you might call local sustainable food system. And there was a movie once upon a time that had a tagline in it: if you build it, they will come. Remember that? It was like a Kevin Costner movie. But I was thinking about that in terms of, like, if you educate people, the demand will
rise, right? And if we have more demand, then hopefully all the complexities that we're talking about now will sort of be knocked down one by one in a domino fashion. How important do you think that the educational component of all this is?
I would say that education is hugely important. The education piece is, I guess, what's going to define the food choices people are making. And a lot of it is just a lack of knowledge about it. A lack of knowledge in the event that you do have the access and the ability to make food choices. Just not exactly knowing where different foods come from or what the options are because it is so complex. And I think educating, you know, in terms of what we do with Gallatin Valley Farmers School, educating through actually helping the kids engage with the foods and really show them, you know, bring them out to the farms and show them, hey, this is where your food comes from. These are the people who grow it, and really connect them to those people. I think then builds just a greater appreciation for the foods and for the time and resources and labor that went into actually producing them. So I think the more we can educate with some pretty tangible examples of how to be involved in the food system and what it takes, the better off we'll be in terms of steering the community towards a more community-based food system.
And another way to say that, there's an old saying, I won't get it right, but you love what you know. So people don't know or understand what local food, regionally produced food can be and what it means, then they won't value it as much. So our ability to offer that information and connect people to their landscape and the farmers and all the people along the chain that are getting that food to them, that's something you're not going to get from food that's moved from God knows where over to China to be processed and then back to the United States.
So when it comes to public information work, obviously you've got a lot of people in the Gallatin Valley who are already dialed into this. You know, they'll go to the farmers markets, they'll go to the Bozeman Co-op or look it for the local grocery section at Town and Country or in Hebes, and other independent stores in the valley. But how do you go about expanding that other than through the schools? Are there other public outreach kind of campaigns or tools that you think can enlarge the audience beyond the existing kind of choir, so to speak?
That's a huge question. This is Kate, again, if you haven't figured that out online yet, listening over the radio. I think one of the first steps is really getting past that perception that local food is the farmer's market and it is the co-op, because there is a really vibrant and growing network of people in this valley and entrepreneurs who are taking this food across the state into new places for purchase. So I think the first thing is pigeonholing the whole idea. And then it really comes down to, well, who should have access? And so the local food bank has been a huge part of it. You'd be amazed and impressed the amount of regional food that is served at Fork and Spoon. They do a fantastic job really trying to get healthful, sustainably produced food to people. But, you know, they also plug into the commodity system because they have to make ends meet. And that price piece is a hard nugget to get around, I'll admit that. But some of the ways are to ask. When you go to a restaurant, ask. There are some restaurants that are doing a better job than others. When you go to the hospital, ask for it. When you
good
are
luck
up,
with that one.
Yeah. When you
baby
are,
steps.
When you're up at MSU, congratulate them for all the work they've done on their farm to campus program. Mm-hmm.
And your question really made me think about, you know, the standard right now is you turn on the TV or you open up the newspaper and you are bombarded, and kids specifically are bombarded with food ads about junk food, about sugary cereals and soda. And what if, you know, and maybe this is where we go, is what if instead of marketing all of those foods that have a huge dollar amount behind them in terms of a marketing campaign for unhealthy foods, but what if we were marketing our fruits and vegetables and our local food to the community? And so I think Kate spoke to some ways to do that. And then, you know, even just for stores to be promoting what is local, what is seasonal, and then for restaurants to really make sure they're highlighting the products that are that they're serving. And I think our local food businesses do a great job teaching, I guess, educating people via their marketing about the local foods they're using, because they know people care and seek it out.
Sarah, in the schools, when someone from the farm to school program is designing curriculum, or actually, I don't know how much you actually go in and do presentations in person, how much is that an obstacle? That just that, you know, that bombardment that you were talking about of the advertising that tells kids to eat the sugar frosted flakes or whatever, you know, extremely processed food products are being sold by the transnational agribusiness corporations. How do you break through that effectively? Do you have any tricks to share for parents who might be listening about how to do that?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question, because definitely swimming upstream in that respect, local food is not the norm yet, and healthy food. But we find just one of the best ways is to actually show kids, like, hey, roasted winter squash can be as good as potato chips. And that's even a quote from a kid. They say this tastes like potato chips, but really it's roasted winter squash from Gallatin Valley Botanical. So finding the recipes, finding the ways to prepare these fruits and vegetables in ways that are kid-friendly is a huge stepping stone, I think, in terms of getting them to eat more of these fruits and vegetables. And then just, you know, we really try to encourage kids to be open-minded about new foods. So maybe the norm of what they eat is sugar-filled items. But then we try to set a really safe and safe and positive tasting environment where we encourage them to be brave, adventurous tasters. We set, which I'm sure many parents have heard if there in our programs, please don't yuck my yum. So being open to other folks' taste preferences and not yucking anyone's yum, so everyone can create their own opinion about a food. And then again, just by, we do go into the schools on a weekly basis and actually lead cooking and nutrition lessons and school garden lessons and food systems education. And so by showing them that eating and working with and cooking local food can be fun, I think is a huge way to kind of change that behavior. Okay. Fun and accessible.
Well, building on the education opportunities that are out there, I mean, there's informal channels through the community and having good stories in the newspaper that are really talking about some of these new businesses and their success and what some of our businesses are doing to be more sustainable. There's a whole sustainable tourism movement. So there's that type of work, but there's also higher education, and MSU has a couple of programs that are really helping students dive into these questions in a very thoughtful way. There's the Sustainable Food and Bioenergy Systems Program. I don't know how familiar your readers or listeners might be to that, but they have pulled together an interdisciplinary hands-on curriculum that really focuses on the ecological, the cultural, the economic, and the health pieces of food and the bioenergy systems from production through consumption. So it's not just about how far your food travels, it's how it's produced and how it's cooked and stored and so on and so forth. So that's one really amazing program they have up at MSU. And another newer program is the hospitality management program up there, which is also fabulous and very thoughtful about teaching a whole new generation of professionals. And they have three different programs within that. There's the food enterprise piece, and that's looking at innovation and entrepreneurship. And those students are exploring strategies. How do you add value to Montana's specialty crops? While you're also learning about food science and small-scale processing, product development, marketing, distribution. They have a channel about lodging and facilities, and those folks also get exposed to farm-to-table concepts and realities. And then the third, which is restaurant management, and there's a real emphasis within that program on farm-to-table sourcing and healthful cuisine, and what does it really take to make that happen? So I think education from the youth all the way through, it's a lifelong learning process.
All right. Can I ask, in your Aaron, in your education of youngins, what seems to motivate them most to care about where food comes from, how food's produced. What is it when you're trying to teach them this value system? When do you see their eyes light up more?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the ways to really connect them to it is to get them out in the garden and actually grow it. I would say the most impactful times I've had with children is when we're in the garden and they, you know, we've planted and they're able to actually harvest. Maybe it's to pull a carrot out of the ground, and maybe it's a kid who doesn't know that a carrot came from the ground, and just seeing their face when they pull that out. Maybe it's a huge carrot or maybe it's a tiny carrot, but regardless, they are just, you know, just that kind of sense of wonder. And I kind of see that that wow moment of, wow, this is really where a carrot comes from. Or it's, you know, popping a cherry tomato into their mouth right off the plant, and they thought they didn't like tomatoes, because trying a tomato in the middle of winter in Montana, it's not going to be the same as picking one out of your garden. So when they can actually be connected to the food as close to its source as possible, that's when we really see them light up and be engaged and really, really, I guess, excited and curious about food.
Yeah, you make it more concrete for them, give them an actual experience, then that stays with them.
Yeah, and you would think here in Montana, in an agricultural area, that, you know, most kids are connected, but with grocery stores selling products year-round that don't really change seasonally, I mean, it's actually very easy to become disconnected, and that's what we've seen here, is even children here in Montana are more and more disconnected to the source of their food.
Are you guys familiar with the nature deficit disorder concept?
Yep.
Yeah. It's pretty self-explanatory, but the sense that people are disconnected from their food, from nature. And the person who wrote the book on that, Richard Louv, he like lined out the top five reasons or trends behind why kids are disconnected and people are disconnected today. And number one was food. People just are not connected to where their food comes from anymore. So I think what Aaron said was totally spot on of touching the carrot and the dirt it comes from.
And Aaron, based on what you were saying, the kick to mind a question, are there programs within the schools to teach cooking? Are there facilities for doing classes like that? And how widespread is it, if so?
Yeah, so with Galton Valley Farm to School, we have a kind of mobile kitchen set up, so we'll bring it into classrooms and do cooking lessons. Next month, our harvest of the month is lentils, and so we'll be highlighting some local Montana lentils and making things like lentil hummus and lentil salads with the children in the classrooms. We also do a family cooking night program.
When are you serving the lentils?
When?
Yeah.
Do you want to come?
That is the
Yeah. Come to our lesson. Well, and so that would be a...
I think you just missed the lunch underground. That was down in Dillon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, last night I think they had a big lunch feast.
And that would be a shout out for any parents listening to look on your school lunch menu and find out when the school food service is serving lentils, because they are highlighting the Montana Harvest of the Month crop each month in the school lunch. So visit your kid for lunch that day and show your support for the Montana products during the lunch. And then cooking. So you said facilities. So we have mobile kitchen set up. Some of the schools have their own cooking carts and they will cook with the kids during the school day. We do a lot of that within the school district. But then the middle schools, they still have family and consumer science programs. So over at Chief Joseph and Sacagawea, and probably more that I don't know about, they do cooking classes with all of their students, just as kind of a basic skill building. So I think the cooking piece cannot be understated. I mean, we use sharp knives with our second grade students once they've shown us that they can handle it. And they... you know, once you have cooking skills, you have the skills to be able to transform something that could look, you know, kind of scary into a healthy meal or snack. And so I would just encourage people to, as much as you can, engage your kids in cooking or come to one of our family cooking nights. We teach you how to do that.
And sorry, just one quick follow-up. What about adults in the Gallon Valley who grew up?
It's too late for us.
I learned how to cook a little bit, but you know, I imagine there's a sizable portion of the adult population that really doesn't know much about how to do more than you know, boil pasta and some other real basic things. Are there opportunities for them?
Yeah, well, through our family cooking nights, we bring parents and kids together and start basic with the cooking skills, and the parents are helping their kids cook, so we're building skills that way. There are also a lot of great chefs in town who I know do cooking classes. One of the ones that comes to mind is Claudia Cravat of Claudia's Mesa. She's also known as the Lentil Lady in town. She's on our board of directors, but she leads cooking classes throughout the year through her business. And so there are many others, I'm sure. But yeah, I would say that's a great thing to pursue if you're looking for some extra cooking skills. Because that can, I think, be a challenge, you know, going back to the local food piece, that can be a challenge of you get a kohlrabi, what the heck is this vegetable and how do I use it? You know, so just that education on how to actually transform these products from the whole to the meal.
I think it would be really fun for you guys to bring in, say, Jill Holder from Gallup Valley Food Bank. And they worked with some researchers up on campus out of the Food and Health Lab on the Unprocessed Pantry Project. And it was a 12-week project where folks who are clients, customers at the food bank were able to get fresh food once a week and some tips on how to cook it, and they saw some real impact in the energy levels of the individuals who were involved. I haven't actually had a chance to hear the full results yet, so I don't want to say any more, but that would be someone that would be really interesting to bring on.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful way to sort of re-enable people to do things that are so essential to life and enjoyment of life, preparing your own food being one of them. And one of the things that the sort of macroeconomics of our globalized food system has created is a gigantic disability on the part of a lot of people to understand food, to enjoy food, appreciate it, prepare it, the whole gamut. So it's wonderful that you take children and sort of engage them at the level of like pulling from the ground and then preparing and tasting and enjoying. Is there any value also in discussing the economics, the inequities in particular of the way that farming is conducted on the sort of macro level in our country? Do you ever do that? Do you ever try to like critique the system that produces the food that you just put into the microwave, right? The dead food that you reanimate by hitting the 1 minute plus button. I mean, do you ever engage in that, or is there no value in a critique of the way the status quo of our food system?
There is a huge value in that, and that I think engaging in discussions about the inequity of our food system are going to be and are kind of an essential element to figuring out how we can create a more resilient food system that is equitable, because our food system, and Ricardo Salvador from the Union of Concerned Scientists was recently the keynote speaker at the Alternative Energy Resources Association conference here in Bozeman a couple weeks ago. And he, you know, his talk led through the whole history of the food system and the entrenchment in racism and land grabbing, and just that perpetuated the current inequities we see in the industrialized food system that prides itself on being efficient, but efficient and cheap. But in actuality, the cheapness is due to all the hidden costs that we don't see, with a large part of them being the inequities and the labor issues that we see in those food systems. So I don't think you can have a discussion about the food system without addressing that and thinking about that. And hopefully that's a discussion that can take place in a little bit more depth here in Bozeman as we move forward.
Just want to remind folks, you are listening to KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm Jeff Milchin, along with co-host Steve Kirchhoff, and you're listening to a discussion of our local food systems with our guests Kate Wright of Open and Local and Aaron Jackson of the Gallatin Valley Farm to School program.
This is Kate again, and I was just going to add that one thing that's really important is to come to the conversation with some respect for people who really do come to it. They're trying to feed the world, and cheap food in this country has a really dark underbelly, and yet it is also what allowed us to land on the moon at a certain level, because no one had to think about food for so long. And now we're starting to realize that that is not a good way to continue. It's not respectful of the other people we share the planet with, if you want to think about it that broadly. But it's also not serving us in the long haul in terms of the health of our bodies, the health of our local economies, the health of our soils, and our sustainability and resilience of our communities over the long haul. So the conversation that Aaron mentioned, that's actually, it was an incredibly powerful hour and a half lesson in history that Dr. Salvador offered.
And folks can catch that on YouTube now, right?
Correct. It is available on YouTube. You can get to it through the Open and Local Facebook page. I imagine Arrow will have it up shortly as well.
And speaking to that kind of our industrialized food systems, or the food system, I recently saw a report by the Montana Department of Ag that found that in 1910, farmers and ranchers earned on average 60 cents of each dollar consumers spent on food. But by 2007, this is specifically grain farmers, but the value of Montana grain farmers' share was about 7 cents for every food dollar. So there's also lots of research that shows that the system actually is not working for most producers and is kind of, I think, a wake-up call for us to figure out how to change that, because the producers are the backbone of any community, I mean, of our local food system, but our community in general. Without them, we aren't going to have access to these healthy foods on a community-based scale. So we need to really figure out how we can be supporting them and allow them to make a viable wage, a living, and expand and hold on to their land and this incredibly hard job that they are doing
right. That
benefits us.
Well, it's a great transition. We spent most of the first half of the show talking about kind of personal decisions and education and what's being done locally. So what are, from our guests, some of the thoughts about the big picture, going from what we can do as consumers to what do we need to do as citizens to change a lot of these things that distort the picture, that make some of the worst and least sustainable food the cheapest on the grocery store shelves and start changing some of those structural issues?
Well, I mean, one of the things is education. I mean, how many people know that Montana once produced 70% of the food that we ate here, and now we import 85%? So there's a lot of room, and I know the population is bigger now and the world has changed, but there's a ton of room that if people understood that fact, would open the door to doing things a little differently. And another sort of factoid, there was a research study done that focused on Western Montana a little while ago. And one of the things they found is that if people in Western Montana just purchased 15% of their food locally or regionally, that would generate roughly $66 million of new farm income for farmers and ranchers in Montana. And those are huge numbers, and those would make a really big impact for our economy locally, keeping those dollars local.
Mm-hmm. So kicks to mind one idea. I know a lot of utility companies have found that if you include in customers' utility bills, here's how you're doing compared to your neighbors in usage of energy. Is there any viable way you could do that with food to kind of make it a friendly competition among folks?
That would be an amazing tool.
Or just to even have an idea. Because, I mean, you know,
yeah.
For a long time, I've made an effort to buy locally produced goods, but I have no idea percentage-wise what that actually amounts to.
Yeah. I think there are people working on that. I think it's a complicated question. It's like you buy a local salsa, but are those tomatoes local?
Mm-hmm.
Like how, it's a matter of awareness and just going a little deeper every day, a little bit more, and asking those questions.
And I was actually recently thinking about that on the school-wide level. I thought it would be fun because some of the schools are now composting their food waste. Mm-hmm. So to have some kind of food waste competition to see which schools can divert, you know, the least amount, have the least amount of waste, but, you know, that being diverted into compost. But then there also are some, I know I think it's the Northern Plains Resource Council leads a local food challenge each August. And so that's something that folks can look into. And there are prizes for posting your pictures of your local food meals on their social media and that sort of thing. And so I think there would be a lot more opportunity to engage people in this because we all know people like competition. So I think that's a great thought. And we would definitely be open to any other ideas in that realm.
Do you know where the other 63 cents that used to go to the farmers, where is that going now?
Well, I don't know specifically, but I would imagine it's going into their fertilizer costs, it's going into their transportation costs, and it's just being kind of pinched out into all of the other steps that are required and into the larger corporations that are kind of requiring them to produce their food in a certain way. And they're at the mercy of whatever the commodity price is for that food. And so they're also getting whatever the market price is and don't have any control over that.
That's so peculiar, isn't it? Like being a good producer actually reduces the value of your product.
Yeah, and you have no say in it.
Do you have the sense that the egg producers, the farmers and the ranchers themselves are also militating in a similar fashion somewhere? Maybe they're having a radio program in eastern Montana where they're talking about like unyoking themselves from this food system that has so many inequities in it?
Well, I can say I know Tommy Bass, who is the MSU Extension Livestock Specialist, and he was just at a conversation with a bunch of ranchers. Every kind of hat you can imagine was in the room, stock growers, MAGA, you name it. And they were all really frustrated that they are raising a premium product and they're not getting what it's worth because it's going through the commodity system and being mixed with a product that is not nearly as well raised or as amazing as what they're doing. And so, yes, I think the inequities in the system are being noticed at many levels.
And there's kind of a new buzzword out there, which is regenerative agriculture, but it's a lot more than a buzzword because it's actually this, I mean, it's folks have been doing it for decades, but it's kind of resurfacing as the next level of sustainability. So we don't just want to sustain what we're doing because it turns out we've degraded a lot of the soils that we rely on to grow food, but we want to actually regenerate. So build these systems that are resilient to whatever the changing climate brings, that are resilient to the changes in crops that we need to start growing. And so it's this idea of focusing on the whole system for the food production. So looking at the soil health and how are our practices contributing to that, and how are we actually regenerating versus just sustaining. So there are a lot of producers moving in that direction, and there are tons of programs. I know with the Northern Plains Resource Council does a lot of work advocating for regenerative agriculture and soil health practices. New Mexico passed a soil health bill. And so it is definitely moving in that direction where folks are realizing that they're kind of in this entrenched system, and there are opportunities to have the freedom to do what they want and to actually make a living with it in a different kind of system. So I would say, yes, we're in that transition towards more environmentally friendly and long-term growing practices.
Good news in 2019.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to come by. Lovely when it does.
Yes.
But one of the bright spots also, you know, we've seen through the past several decades, almost total non-enforcement of antitrust law, whether it's Democrats or Republicans in power in Washington, D.C. And in the past few years, we're certainly seeing an upswelling of awareness and organizing around those issues because, you know, when we're talking about why is so much less of the money going to farmers and ranchers and food producers these days, the oligopolies in the ag industry are certainly a big part of that. Mm-hmm. I forget the specific data, but, you know, when it comes to meat packing, maybe you guys know, but I think it was four corporations owning upwards of 80% of the market. So,
yep.
And in many places, the local producers don't even have those four to choose from. They can only sell to one or maybe two of those companies. So they effectively have the power to shove down the prices that the farmers and ranchers are getting, making it very tough to have a viable farming ranching operation in many cases. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's anything that either of you would like to add on kind of that end of the picture.
Well, bringing it back to Montana and thinking about, you know, our folks in Eastern Montana talking about this. I was at the Montana Ag Finance Summit last spring, and there was a gentleman who'd just come back. He'd taken over the family farm, and within, was it 14, 18 months, found himself $250,000 in the hole, roughly. Like, I probably don't have that number exactly right. But he was like, it's the system I'm bought into, and we can't keep doing it this way. Not only is it not sustainable for the soils, it's not sustainable for the family finances. So I think this is an issue that really could and does cross the political spectrum. And so finding a way to talk about it as a whole community, we're all in this together, trying to build a system that works for us, is super critical.
And does Open and Local engage in trying to inject these issues into political debate at all? I mean, obviously we have congressional and presidential elections coming up next year, and anti-monopoly and antitrust enforcement is a growing issue. Is that something that you would aim to play any role in?
Well, at this point, I think everyone who's involved with Open and Local understands the importance of policy and procedures, internal to institutions as well as at the city level and the state level. So when our partners are working on something that ties into the food system, we definitely try to amplify that work. And I know one example, at the city level, we have a climate action plan that's going into place. Well, there's a growing movement to really figure out how do you include food in that, because food is a huge part of our resilience as a community. And Erin is actually serving on the advisory team for that, correct?
Yeah, I'm on the climate action plan team, and we're putting together a plan for that we're going to bring to the city commission in February and hopefully have it passed and be a roadmap for Bozeman's plan for addressing climate change. Yeah. And so as part of the subcommittee on the green spaces and natural systems, we're really looking at how does food become a part of that conversation? Because as Kate said earlier, it's not just about parks and trails, which are hugely important, but food needs to be thought about as part of these open spaces. And how can we provide, you know, new neighborhoods with their own spaces for growing food? And really get back to, I mean, back to the land part too, I guess, but mm-hmm. get people back to actually playing a role in that part. And we need to think about it now before the developments are all and have taken over this right. land, so that we can make sure we do have locations that are ready to grow food and build a more resilient community.
Yeah, so just building on that, I mean, Open and Local is focused locally for the most part. And so when there's a chance to help people understand, they can comment on the Triangle Community Plan and that it's relevant to those people who care about food and agriculture. We try to make sure people are aware of that opportunity, or envision Gallatin, the new growth policy that our county is pursuing, making sure that people's voices are really at the table. And then even at the statewide level, while we don't lead on that, being aware of and part of the network of individuals across the state who might be thinking about country of origin labeling for beef and pork, or they might be thinking about passing a bill for double SNAP dollars, which helps low-income folks be able to afford locally produced food.
For folks who may not be familiar, what does that mean, doubling SNAP dollars?
SNAP dollars are basically the equivalent of food stamps. It's what we call them now. And so you could, for example, go to a farmer's market, and there are farmer's markets here that accept food stamps or SNAP dollars right now, but there is a program to double your SNAP dollars at farmer's markets and farm stands and on produce. And if we can, in Montana, pass a bill that helps subsidize that program, that is a very targeted intervention that supports both people in need financially, their families in a tough spot and they don't have enough to eat, and it's also supporting our farmers in state.
Great. I think that explained it well.
Great.
And I'll just speak to one other way for people to get involved. The Bozeman School District, as we've talked about a little bit, has is working to integrate more local food into the school meal program, and so are many of the school districts around. So they're not the only ones by any means, but they started a new program this year called Homemade Mondays. So every Monday, they're serving a scratch-cooked meal for students who buy school lunch, and they also are participating in the Harvest of the Month program. So at least once a month, they'll have a local Montana item served on the menu, and that's marked on the school lunch menus. So one way, if you're a parent, that you can contribute to promoting this local food system is by sending your child to lunch, to eat school lunch on those days, just to show our support and then gain traction for increasing the local food purchases that the district can do. Because at some point it comes down to if it's offered but no one buys it, Right. Then you know, then we're not going to be able to expand it. So I think there really is the need just to get out there and start voting with your dollar.
Yeah, Erin, is that available in every cafeteria in all the schools in the district?
Yeah, so in the Bozeman district, it's all elementary and middle schools. Mm-hmm. Yep, and go to lunch with your kids. There's to,
well,
yeah.
My kids are in their 30s, but
well, go to lunch with someone else's kid then.
I might just show up.
Yeah,
I don't live far from Irving School.
Yeah, and you can do that, and they have great fresh fruit and vegetable bars. Mm-hmm. They're serving all local apples throughout the winter as long as they're available. Yeah. Regional apples, I should say.
From the Missoula
area. So a lot going on, and it's like Kate said, kind of being aware of what's going on and then plugging yourself into it in whatever way you can so that you can have your voice heard in it all.
All right. Yeah. So looking at the... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say one more thing, which is to, you know, grow your own food as well. I think that's a great way to participate on the ground level in the local food system, whether it's perennial trees and bushes that can provide fruit for low maintenance costs, or it's an annual garden. There are lots of ways to actually be engaged in it and divert some of your food dollars you would have spent on kind of the industrial food system into the local food system.
Right, thanks.
And if you're like many of us and you end up with too much of something, be it zucchini or something else, the food bank does accept extra produce from individuals across the community.
Yeah, help support those who can't afford to grow their own food.
Great. So I was curious to just touch briefly on the retail side of things also, and from the perspective of, say, the managers of local grocery stores, do you find that any of the national chains have any discretion or interest to want to source locally, or do you have to go primarily just to the independent, locally owned grocery stores to be able to make that work? And secondly, the other part of the question, what are their concerns beyond obviously price? Are they more focused on the cost being super competitive with what they can get from agribusiness sources, or are issues around consistency of the supply and kind of quality issues more of a challenge? Do you have a good sense of that?
This is Kate, and I can't say that I work directly with our grocery stores. Mm-hmm. The ones that I'm aware of in my work to date, they tend to be independent or locally owned that are doing more of that type of work. I hear that there are chains that are trying to leverage that and think about good food policies, but I don't know how much that's actually trickling down at this point.
Kind of conflicts with the whole corporate clone model of of setting up grocery stores that are using one supplier for hundreds or thousands of stores to economize.
It would be wonderful if we could welcome sort of mainstream channels for food to start increasing their participation in local and regional food systems. And I know, for example, everyone likes to villainize Sysco, but they actually sometimes do carry local on their trucks. And so don't just assume because someone's mainstream that they won't move that direction or can't. I think we just need to keep pushing and inviting people to the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll add on to that. I do know all of the locally owned grocery stores, they're really in support of serving or providing local products. But there are some more, some of the franchises that I've had discussions with, just, you know, kind of asking, hey, do you have any local products? And They're very willing. I think it does come back to the supply chain issue of, can they get it distributed there? Do they have enough of the supply? But I think if that is the norm of people asking, mm-hmm. where's your local food supply, then I think we are going to move the needle towards that being something that they want to meet the needs of the consumers. And so if consumers demand it, then I think they're more likely to move in that direction. Yeah, so I think folks are open to it.
And,
yeah.
And I have to throw in there one quick thought. Just that there are people who will advertise local or sustainable or whatever it is, and sometimes you might just want to do a quick double check on whether there's some greenwashing going on mm-hmm. there. And it's hard, it's a lot for someone who's busy and you just got done with your day and you're dashing through the grocery store. Like, that's not necessarily the time when your kid's sick and your mother is face, you know, just fell down the stairs and God knows what it is that you're up against in your personal life. But having that curiosity to right. keep asking and pushing for healthier, more sustainable, more regional and local.
Right. Things. Well, I was curious to hear, and since, you know, for most of the national franchises, whether it's, you know, McDonald's, Subway, what have you, they have very rigid requirements that you buy directly from their designated national sources. So what are some examples of local franchises that do give local owners some discretion over where they source things?
Well, I know Rose Hours this year, the flower business, Calliope Flowers, I think we can treat flowers as part of the mm-hmm. local food system. They're a local flower business, and they were the singular seller of flowers at Rose Hours this year. So I know they were very in support of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think Rose Hours is one of the more open chains in the area.
So in closing our program today, just want to invite Kate and Aaron to let folks know any opportunities they may have to get involved, where to get more information about your organizations, and how to follow up. So would you like to start us off, Aaron?
Sure. Yeah, and thanks again for having me on the program today. It was really fun to engage in this discussion about local food because it's...
Great conversation.
Yeah, something I pour a lot of time into, so it's fun to talk about. So, Gallatin Valley Farm to School is delighted to be working on this throughout the Gallatin Valley. You can find us on social media at GV Farm to School. Our website is gvfarmtoschool.org. And so you can find Gallatin Valley Farm to School on our social media. You can follow at GV Farm to School. We also have a website, gvfarmtoschool.org, and we are in many of the schools in the Gallatin Valley, so if you aren't already engaged in our programs, please reach out to your school and see how else you can bring us in to help promote the food education and garden education of our youth in the Valley. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and I would second that, Erin. It has been a real pleasure and seriously fun to sit down with the three of you to talk about community food systems, which are so important on so many levels, making food fresh and healthy and equitable for all of us across the whole spectrum. And it's not easy. Food systems are super complicated. And I think Open and Local is very excited in coming months and years to really help our community better understand our local food system, our community food systems, and engage more directly in our regional food economy. So you can find us, anybody who wants to learn a little bit more. We don't have a website yet. We're entirely volunteer collaboration of, we have 11 steering committee members, and then we have a whole network of folks who are just interested in the food system or are engaged in it themselves, just like Erin is. You can find us on Facebook, so at Open Local MT.
Well, thank you very much, Kate Wright and Erin Jackson, for joining us today.
Yeah, I would just like to say thank you. It's been a great conversation. It's very hopeful, and it's a very positive conversation to be having, and I wish you both, and I wish everybody good luck changing our food systems for everyone's improvement.
And we'll catch you next time on The View From Here. You're listening to KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM.